interrupting the current,
neo-uranial,
climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy starved, alien invaded, nuclear glowing, postulated cricketism, to ring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 541. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. That's you taking the miscreant to task. The way you do that, you figure out, typically the government, someone in authority, you figure out what their duties are. You get those, not in your opinion, in the black and white that they've agreed to in their either employment or their office, by their oath, and you make sure that they comply. A lot of times they don't. So you start your record that way, saying that they haven't. And show you, give them an opportunity to do so before they start acting against you. That's not always the case when we see in the world. But before I move on to that, as I was just thinking about the episodes, there's been a long lag between the archives and the podcast page, not the blogcaster page, but the podcast. There's a nice little LP replayer. You can do a player. It's a digital player, actually, that Grimner set up. And when he got sick, before he died, he stopped posting. So it's been over a year. I just want to let anybody know who was been waiting for the updates. The podcast playlist player is now up to date. So if you just go to that page, if you don't want to go to the blogcaster and get the links and learn something, figure out how I'm pulling this stuff together for you, and that you can take it and move out, see other things you're going to do with it. Information around the world, the so-called notice to us, the news, they call it. I call it new notice. But the podcast now should be up to archive, and it should all be working. And, thank you for your patience. Quite a few people were asking about it all this time. I didn't know how to get into it. I figured it out and got that worked out. So the podcast player is now on a list. It should be easy to find and play. We're moving into things that we find out that you think were so that aren't. But most all the time anymore, it seems. I just don't know what it's going to take to cause people to break. And I keep talking about some of this stuff to point out matters that someone might be able to use. I don't see people using them. That's why I mention them. But we find another court now. And I've been talking about Julian Assange, but we find another court that now doesn't look at the United States for inhumane prisons. Look at the UK itself. And the German court rules UK prisons are unsafe. Karlsruhe, higher regional court has refused to extradite an Albanian man wanted in Britain on drug-related charges. So what's that say about the Assange treatment? We have UK courts that have UK courts, not German courts, looking at UK, but UK looking at the United States saying not extraditing for the same reason, inhumane prisons. In this case, the Britain's prisons are unsafe in Britain. So what's that say about the treatment of Assange? And then there's the lack of appreciation in the condition relative to the decisions of the U.S. prisons. I've been calling out for quite a long time. That whole system, it's already been condemned by British courts. And so what about this shows that Assange is not, the Assange matter is not about justice. It's not about that at all. It's certainly about a political hit. And so we can watch these courts, kind of interesting, watch one court decide against another, you know, to give us an insight as to, well, again, the information that we need, and I would hope that people would step up and use this. It doesn't matter that people will use the excuse, it doesn't matter, it's futile. Well, it might be, but enough people show the mass of conscience, and it does force things to go, but you got to do it more proper. You just don't come flying at this with your subjective opinion. There's a standard these folks work by. And you have to get real strict on how you apply those standards, because they use those standards, but then they use them to evade the justice that's required. This should be on the front end of everybody's discussion at this point. German court rules UK prisons unsafe, wouldn't extradite. UK court said the United States was not inhumane, and they wouldn't extradite a couple people, but they're going to extradite Assange. In a place that's now been determined to be unsafe as well. Again, look at the global problem on these courts, these prison systems. And we the people everywhere seem to tolerate it. Well, it won't be further tolerated. A Pennsylvania court says state police can't hide how it monitors social media. Now, you may think this is a little bit frivolous. Who cares about social media? I'm suggesting to you to reconsider that strongly, given that's going to be the hub of your life, is these things in, not social, it's digital. And all your connection through it. You don't think you're, where you go and look at Amazon's not a social event. You wait till you start seeing what they start doing with these background data streams, this big data against all of us and individually you. And if you're not working now to separate yourself by using, or try to, different browsers that do different things, that I mean, you do different things on each browser and do not cross them up. And if you try to, keep that going, if you don't use the Tor browser, if you don't use some anonymity, they're collecting everything and tracking you along. And so this is important in that you look at social media as being just your digital world, your token citizenship as it's being modified. But a Pennsylvania court says state police can't hide how it monitors social media. And this is how we end up learning what we need to learn and what they try to keep us away from. And this may be specific to Pennsylvania. You'd have to go check about this, but this would be a potential inroad under Pennsylvania's right to know law. Now, to me, that's not much different in the words in the open records for state, not FOIA. FOIA is federal. The Freedom of Information Act is federal. It's open records typically is what it's called in the local states. But here, Pennsylvania has a right to know law. Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that the state police can't hide from public its policy on how it monitors social media. They had a big, the police didn't like that whatsoever. They said you're gonna know how they get at y'all. But the point here was made on this case that I thought was something I've been talking about. It's your right to know as a populace, a voting populace. The way this place is wired is the people, the democracy, the demo part, the political part is you have to be informed to have a say on how you're going to be ruled in the prison that you're under. So, the statement here, people need to know what police are doing in order to decide if it's appropriate. The attorney here at ACLU, Andrew Christie, the lawyer there, talked about it. He says ultimately that relies on the voters understanding what law enforcement is doing so that then through their elected representatives, they can rein them in when they're acting in a way that doesn't comport with what the public wants. That's a funny word, public. Typically, it means government. So this is street language, apparently. But let me suggest to you, you just see two different ways that you're not in control. That you get to vote, but you then get to vote to someone who then has a say. You don't have a say. And people, I don't know if people truly appreciate that part, but your representatives may have a say. You'll notice that your state's attorney general isn't connected. You can't go to the state's attorney general and say a bunch of anything unless there's a statute that says you can. Or there's a program they have that they want information from you. This is somewhat similar to citizens' lawsuits, the citizen suit, like for the Clean Water Act. Unless you are given that statutory right, you don't have the right. You can't do it. The government, and a government agent has to do that. You see right here, you got the vote. You vote for a representative. They're the ones that do stuff. But you have to have information, and it has to be give you the information sufficient to make those decisions. I'm surprised that more people don't go this route, but this case may start to point that out. I think it's very important. It's not just about social media as well, I guess, is the point here. And when you extend the need to know, the necessity for the people to know, as even as a voter, the bottom of the rung, you may be able to find a lot of power in being able to get more information. And we're going to need to know. We need to learn this stuff, and we need to learn what they're doing against us. It's not so clear, and as you're looking at the national side, when you see the FBI doing so much wrong, that's because it's undercover. They don't have to expose it, and the attorneys are there to cover that up as well. We are in a desperate need to know quite a few things, but what they've done and learned to do is stick it under necessity. That's what essentially the police department was arguing, the state police was saying. So this is going to give up how we do things, and the attorney's saying, or the lawyer, is again, not anybody, one of you or me, but a lawyer, another representative, is saying, no, we have the public, the people, the voters have the right to understand. I agree with that. So I wanted to let you all know, very important story there to me in how this works, moving on through social media and how we learn, what we learn, what's available to us, and how it becomes so much more difficult, even with all this information, it's almost too much in a way. not that it's so much, it's just how do you parse it? How do you filter it in the proper way? But social media algorithms warp how people learn from each other, research shows. And boy, if we haven't learned that already on social medias like Twitter or X Twitter or Facebook or whatever, I don't know how people are missing this one, but people's daily interactions with online algorithms affect how they learn from others, with negative consequences including social misperceptions, conflict, and the spread of misinformation. My colleague, the author, says, I have found that people are increasingly interacting with others in social media environments where algorithms control the flow of social information they see. Algorithms determine in part which messages, which people, and which ideas social media users see. This is not like even a new concept. I just want to call it out for us today. It's not inconsequential what goes on. No different than the police wanting to hide how they do things, and how they secret themselves into social media, how they influence the companies, is a very serious thing. We're watching, if you don't see it in Trump, regardless of what my opinion of the guy is, if you don't see the made up factors of these and the people that start to go dishonest on us, you're missing a whole angle here. That is actually being used. You could say if they go against Trump, they go against everybody, but they're going to go against everybody. They did that in 9/11. That's where we were told, when everyone became a misdemeanor because they said so. On social media platforms, algorithms are mainly designed to amplify information that sustains engagement. This is another thing. Understand the system you're in. And always put that as engagement things, sustainable engagement. Is something that's in the forefront of my mind when I'm looking at why am I even seeing some of this stuff. But then moving here to the story, the report, the company wants to sustain engagement. It turns a profit. This is all essentially what it's about, meaning that they keep people clicking on content and coming back to the platform. I'm a social psychologist, and my colleagues and I have found evidence suggesting that a side effect of these design is the algorithms amplify information people are strongly biased to learn from. Well, we call this information PRIME, the word prime, for prestigious in-group moral and emotional information. In our evolutionary past, biases to learn from the PRIME information were very advantageous. Learning from prestigious individuals is efficient because these people are successful and their behavior can be copied. Paying attention to people who violate moral norms is important because sanctioning them helps the community maintain cooperation. But what happens with PRIME information becomes amplified by algorithm, and some people exploit algorithm amplification to promote themselves. Prestige becomes a poor signal of success because the people can fake prestige on social media. News feeds become oversaturated with negative and moral information so that there is a conflict rather than cooperation. The interaction of human psychology and algorithm amplification leads to dysfunction because social learning supports cooperation and problem solving, but social media algorithms are designed to increase engagement. We call this mismatch functional misalignment. So that's what your brain is doing and becoming is a functional misaligned organ. And so and this is one of those things I'm talking to you about. Be aware of. This is a powerful insight, I hope, for some people, if you already anticipated. This is the things and the subject matters when I read the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and what that awareness came to me, that I realized that there's people that know me better than myself. Knowing that is a big shield to understand and to protect yourself against even what you don't know they know about you. You look at this a little bit different. That's what I'm referring to here when we're looking at this functional misalignment. It's an anticipated thing for you. They understand you to do that. Once you understand this, you start looking at what you're engaging with differently. In fact, you start asking why you're clicking, why are you engaged, and you start then analyzing what's being fed to you. You can actually reverse engineer some of this. It's kind of interesting in a way in that regard. So this is important to me. It was important to tell you. the what's an algorithm? Nothing but they called AI, right? It's just a math program they put together based on some theories, and they are always being practiced and always being modified. But you see, the business of the business is to get your engagement, because that means advertising dollars typically, or even if it's in tokens, you get token buy-in or whatever. So this is a very interesting thing. We're being manipulated for that, and we think it's for our engagement. Another, there's a subtle, I guess, statement on this is that if it's free, you are the product kind of thing, and you're being sold to. So social media algorithms are nothing more than the AI. And so this is, again, as I've told you, it's faulty, and yet there's a lot of prestige put on it. So they use that as well against us. But the U.S. Special Ops to wage real-time AI information war. This is nothing new behind the woodshed. You hear me talking about it for years and years. I kind of concentrated on it here a few months ago. It became a little more important to come together concepts. But here we have U.S. Special Ops to wage real-time AI information war. Acrete, the company facilitating the Pentagon's AI foray, also sells a tool that allows corporations to counter damaging rumors. So how do we learn? We learn by what we take in. It comes in our eyes, our ears, and that's just the surface stuff. Then you got all this interoperable thing that works in conjunction. We've been talking about time relation to music and spatial conceptualizations and time generally. They can adjust all that in your mind. Your mind just adjusts to it. You know, talking with an emailer, we're talking really your body chemistry has a big thing. It may be what causes part of that too. So. And I'm not so sold, because there's a lot of base learning we need about those subsystems, and that's what we tend to not do when you're engaging in social media. You don't look. There's some of us that look for the foundation, but it's very difficult to parse through what the foundation might be. And then when you specialize into things that are scientific, let's say, the real science, not the ones they feed us, there's a lot of base work has to be done to build a foundation, and it has to be accurate. So we don't tend to do that typically. So I've tended to back off a little bit on being so certain about what I think. But however, we can take things that look apparently right, and certainly when there's an answer to be made, like the Kobe swindle, we can make those decisions fairly quickly. And I've found that your intuition, your guided intuition, that's not guided by social media, but independent and non-dependent on that, can be pretty formidable and give you answers pretty quick. It's the thing, I think, when they know you better than yourself, that's the thing that they can't really adjust. You can buy into the stuff you see in the social media, or you can rely on what's internal to you that's been given to you. It's a whole different condition. But U.S. Special Operations Command can now analyze social media data, capture, quote, emerging narratives. So understand how they are going to be ahead of us as they move us along here. And it won't matter where you are. Wherever they can get their little digital fingers in, they're going to be there. And so we'll see. Emerging narratives, and quickly generate the information a military force would need to stamp out unfriendly trends, even as they are still in the process of going viral. Now, this is speaking directly to what we've been talking about, the military involved, and directly into the censorship and what was going on. But they're telling us now this Acrete software is looking into the future and anticipating what's going on, and it's going to interact with you in real time now. So these are pretty interesting emerging narratives. Who is this military that wants to make this discussion relative to your social need to communicate with your fellow people, if I can call them citizens without getting too many people upset, your fellow citizens to make decisions? Who are these people in the military already in there, as if you're an enemy? See, this is already the interesting thing that I just follow, is you've been made enemies by your own military in your countries. And that's not some of us know that, it's just governments kill. But the point is that you are now the focus, you are the enemy. That's why you're looking at the domestic terrorism been built up. That's been all fabricated as well, but that's how they're getting control. Now, the tool that they have here would be used to intelligence and analysts and other specialists to, quote, predict real-time disinformation threats from social media, the company explained. And this is going to be a little bit of a theme, not a big one, but who makes that decision? If you look at my thread, if you will, on the Twitter, the ex-Twitter, the Twitter Tanic, you're going to find I'm referring to the law. You find if you went to YouTube and RLM, and I would put something up, and SoundMinds was having a terrible time. He got his accounts cut out. they were saying that there was a misinformation or disinformation on those things, and I'm talking strictly out of the law. And so this would be like the military. This is like any bureau rat as well, making the decision on their limited myopic view is the danger of what we're into. But they're talking about a tool that anticipates this and feeds information into change your learning capacity and what you learn and what you think you're learning in real time. It's happening on the fly. You really wouldn't even recognize it. And the better that they get with it, you aren't going to recognize it. Like I used to be really, really good at picking out these fake pictures, but they're getting very much more difficult to figure out. And if they're, the video might be a little bit easier actually in some regards, but they have there's things you can look for, but boy, that difference is getting very difficult. As fast as computers are running, as good as the programming is, the AI algorithms are, it's getting very difficult to make the idea and decision that that's good or bad relative to how this comes out. But these might include AI-generated viral narratives, deep fakes, and other harmful social media-based applications of AI, Accrete CEO Prashant Bhuyan said in the company's statement, claiming these pose a serious threat to U.S. national security and civil society, and that social media itself is an unregulated environment where adversaries routinely exploit reasoning vulnerabilities and manipulate behavior through the intentional spread of disinformation. Well, that's you and me, typically, but that's the government. That's what it does. In other words, we're back to the bureau rat making a decision relative to its myopic view and agenda, to say that whatever is being said may not be right. We have the right to acquire information that's bad. That trains us in how to make better decisions as well, as we move along and be embarrassed by how far down a path we went thinking it was correct, and then find out later there's a fact that turns up that just throws it on its head, and we got a new awareness. These are important lessons for us, but they're not wanting us to see this, and they wanted the government now. The military has now claimed the domain of the civil society. Remember, that's just like the Soros stuff, civil society. It's what they determined to be so-called civil. And so be very careful when you're reading that. You're being told some very powerful things here, and what the future is, that it's already actually here, but they've got to bring it on. And then they always throw the national security issue on it. What's a national security? They claim is misinformation when we just need information. One of our securities is to be able to teach ourselves how to make proper decisions on information. They're going to take that from you. So this is a very serious problem that we're looking at going in here with the digital world. Again, algorithms we talked about earlier are nothing more. They call it AI. It's an artificial implementation. It's error prone. They all know that, and yet it's being moved through like it's real. The danger with this is ultimately when you get it into the judiciary and they say finally, and there is a process about this, evidence has to go through long time testing to make sure that evidence is evidence, such as fingerprints. And so there's a standard that's developed over a long time on what would make whatever it takes to make a fingerprint actual evidence to be able to conclusively or pseudo-conclusively, fictionally conclusively say that someone was there with their fingerprint. But this is what AI does, but it doesn't do it very well. They don't know what the black box is doing. I don't know how they can make stuff evidence. Right now, the courts are pretty good at saying no. In fact, the attorneys are being attacked for using AI-generated text for their briefs, so that's a good sign. The point is that's not in social media. Whatever's going to get you to engage is what's going to be in social media. The government sits in the backside of that. Yes, the backside. And they're controlling how you're going to work and learn and understand and even interact with somebody if you do. I mean, I just get the pretty girls showing up on my ex account. They just show up. I don't even never talk to them. They like my stuff, but no one else seems to like my stuff but the pretty girls. Well, those are the bots. And okay, so I guess I get a bit flattered by the pretty girls, but no one else interacts. I find that fascinating. And then all these persistent people that are in there that are professing to be these experts, especially the data crunchers can show you how many people died with COVID and all this other stuff and how it was all bad. Yeah, that was already there, but we predicted that beforehand. No, they're going to show, get just some prestige for how they do it, and they're missing the whole point. They missed the whole point that the numbers, when you're dealing with a bioweapon, you're going to find deaths. It should have never been implemented, so you're talking after the fact and late. We didn't protect anybody. What I've been trying to talk people into understanding as we move into the next phase. But here we have going on with algorithms. We talk about AI-generated things, life or death. Well, this one scared me. Life or death. AI-generated mushroom foraging books are all over Amazon. So what about learning from AI? What is this social media thing that can manipulate how we learn from other people as well? And actually, it goes beyond social media, because when you go meet people, they're thinking through that filter as well. I don't even know if people really can discuss things with each other anymore. It seems there's this odd lack of real communication. I remember doing with people. It's this different type of thing, it seems, going on. But what about learning from AI? Yeah, you can learn. They can generate stuff. What we say, though, even the attorneys got nailed for doing it wrong. I've told you example after example why I tell you. These AIs are error-prone, garbage in, garbage out, and then it's whoever programmed it, and whatever their bias is. Life or death, AI-generated mushrooms foraging books all over Amazon. Like I said, this one scared me a little bit, knowing about mushrooms. If you've ever looked at them and studied them, this is a very serious thing. This is definitely life or death. A genre of AI-generated books on Amazon is scary foraging and mycologists, scaring foragers and mycologists, cookbooks and identification guides for mushrooms aimed at beginners. Amazon has an AI-generated book problem that's been documented by journalists for months. So this is a new phenomenon in which I hadn't heard of. You know, I guess it's the logical progression when you hear about this stuff. I didn't really add it together that people would actually try to make money. This is how the corrupt we are. We'll try to make money with an AI-generated book. And, many of these books are obviously gibberish designed to make money. Let me offer something about a lot of people can't figure out gibberish, it seems. And it's a very interesting problem. But experts say here the AI-generated foraging books specifically could actually kill people if they eat the wrong mushroom because a guidebook written by an AI prompt said it was safe. The New York Mycological Society warned on social media, here we get to learn something from there, right, that proliferation of AI-generated foraging books could mean life or death. What about that recipe AI in the grocery store? You put the ingredients in and it'll tell you how to make your poison. Yeah, this is interesting. And this is really so subtle for beginners. This is a deadly sport, if you will. A deadly hobby if you start getting into consuming what you find. There has been a couple of times I've looked. I'm not too partial at eating mushrooms generally. Just one of those things against it. They don't agree with me so much. However, I do like them as an organism and a biology and what they do in the world. And they're fascinating, but to tell you the truth, walking in and trying to identify one, when you see how subtle the differences are between a good one and a bad one, you got to understand the problem with this particular book AI thing. And we're going to have lots of these types of ideas coming through. I guess the point is how you're a beginner. How do you filter out the bad information? There's a lot of people that just throw caution to the wind. And maybe that's part of the plan, but I don't know. That was a scary one. AI being used, people thinking they're making money, and Amazon's doing its best, but still the books get out and people start to kill themselves. Hopefully they're not running that fast, but it can happen. It happens all the time. People who think they know about mushrooms kill themselves. And this is going to happen with all kinds of things in the materials, chemicals, and all this kind of thing. The next new fad that sweeps through the social media network because AI military is back there getting people to do the next TikTok stupidity. Who knows how this works out. But again, it's all about the dollar getting you to click. Getting you the AI's drivenness, finding out your books anymore. This is why, you know, maybe even books aren't going to be worked. You got to get the old stuff. And then that may not be the stuff you want that has the new knowledge. If there's good new knowledge, we're finding remember those thousands and thousands and thousands of research studies that were done, as particular from China, were all bad. So where is this information going? Information overload for nothing. To nothing, and then social media constructions on how we're going to understand the world is not looking really good for people that don't understand, don't have a sense of the world walking into it. That may not be for my listeners, my listener here, but it might be for the young future coming through. And they're going to be conditioned by the platforms that they touch. In this case, and showing you it's about the click. And it's about how you're going to be conditioned in the future, whether you keep up to someone else's standards. New X terms of service include old Twitter powers to ban users for commercial inviability. So, commercial inviability. You don't make them enough money. I guess they could just kick you out, and right? I mean, it's Elon Musk's platform. In a move that will likely draw scrutiny, social media platform formerly known as Twitter, and now rebranded as X under the ownership of Elon Musk, is set to implement a new policy on September 29th of this year. While the transition from Twitter to X was met with widespread speculation, the content of the forthcoming policy has become a focal point of discussion due to its retention of a contentious clause about commercial viability. And so we'll go through that more, but you see the bottom line is the bottom line. And Elon Musk knows all about that. And that's where he's going to be pushing this thing on top of moving more features into the system in order to bring on, well, more for commercial viability. When you know what he's going to do, this all thing, he's going to do the everything, and he's going to get into finances, that's where it's going. It's going, again, these token citizenships, these trackable, traceable, conditionable, excludable type of processes that you will buy into, they'll induce you in, and one of the big ones is convenience. I don't know if I have these stories here. There's so many things to talk about. I don't know if I have the convenience issue here in the tabs today, but that's one of the first things. Well, maybe when we get to the Nigerian point, yes. The convenience is just so convenient, folks. You just go ahead and do it. And this guy knows what he's doing about that, and so you know now see when we say the report that says that they're conditioning how you learn and what you learn, how you interact with people because of algorithm clickability and getting you to engage, that's what he's looking at. He's looking at the commercial viability. It's conceivable to me some account like Behind a Witchhead gets no clicks but from the pretty girls, which is his problem too because they're bots, and he wants to get rid of them. That's why his excuse to get you to verify and pay for it, it's a bunch of traps. He's got their reasons why you should buy in. Again, remember, buy-in is a sustainability technique. So it's that Hegelian dialectic thing, too. So for those of you that haven't paid attention about that, this is what it's all about. It's just all focused. You see where it's going. His corporate objective is to make money. Engagement is how they do that. AI is going to help that. And you're sitting oblivious to most of it as it's conditioning what we go on. And then, again, the military's back there. Take this whole big society and move it where they want, right? Civil society. It's like Soros talks. A judge tears apart Republican lawsuit alleging bias in Gmail spam filter. This story is kind of interesting. It's a truth. I don't know necessarily what the Section 230. There's a truth about it. But in fact, you see how a corporation can position itself to be a political force and not get caught, even though the essence of a political bias is sitting in here. The Gmail isn't a common carrier and is protected by Section 230 of judge rules. As someone who's going to make a lawsuit for this, don't sue as a common carrier. These platforms are not common carriers. A federal judge yesterday granted Google's motion to dismiss a lawsuit filed by the Republican National Committee, which claims that Google's intentional use of Gmail spam filters to suppress Republicans' fundraising emails. An order dismissing the lawsuit was issued yesterday by United States Federal District Judge Daniel Calabretta. While it is a close case, the court concludes the RNC has not sufficiently pled that Google acted in bad faith in filtering the RNC's messages into Gmail's user spam filters, and that the doing so was protected by Section 230. On the merits, the court concludes that each of the RNC's claims fail as a matter of law for the reasons described below. And I was just using this as to show you the how up is, these platforms, these social media platforms that are got their algorithms for clickability, they have a protection. They understand it probably better than most people, but the RNC, you understand, these are the politicians supposed to write laws. They don't know how to write a complaint. And I'm just going to point out and criticize a little bit here. When he says it fails as a matter of law, and he talks about they didn't act, they didn't plead that they acted in bad faith. That was probably one of the, if you went to the section of 230 in one of the subsections, you're going to see that there's an exception to bad faith. But they didn't even plead that. So when anybody wants to write a complaint or even a letter to set up a complaint, make sure you go to the black and white. They're going to have to follow whoever you're after. And you look at the elements that are required in order to prove to be successful. If bad faith is one, you have to prove it. You have to allege that it's in bad faith. You just can't leave it open. The court doesn't add what you don't put in. So this is a very interesting read here. And noting even the RNC, supposed to be a bunch of your politicians who make laws eventually, can't write a complaint. And the judge is coming back to tell him that. I can suggest to you, because of 230 and its power, protecting these platforms for a good reason, and one of the good reasons, for not making them liable to what you write on their platform, they've also positioned themselves so they're almost indestructible in that they make sure that they make the appearance, the plausible appearance, that they're acting in good faith. And so anybody who wants to attack these guys, you're going to have to really look a lot closer. As it goes on to say, Calabretta, a Biden appointee, called it, quote, concerning that Gmail's spam filter has a disparate impact on the emails of one political party and that Google is aware of and has not been able to correct this bias. But he noted that the other large email providers have exhibited some sort of political bias and that if Google did not filter a spam, it would harm its users by subjecting them to the unharmful malware or harassing messages. On the whole, Google's spam filter, though in its instance imperfect, is not morally blameworthy. I found that an interesting statement. Not legally blameworthy, it's not morally blameworthy. Based in this balance that the court attempted to do, and even though it favors an imbalance in the outcome. Very interesting. So those of you that are interested in this subject matter on these platforms, socially manipulating you or manipulating what you believe in, you're going to have you look at these cases to guide you on what not to do, what you need to do, and what their protection, where their safe harbor is. Calabretta gave the RNC partial leave to amend its complaint, but any new version of the lawsuit will have to be very different to move forward. Quote, the court grants defendants' motion to dismiss in full on the ground that it is immune from suit on these facts under Section 230 with leave to amend to establish a lack of good faith. That's for the RNC to do. They're going to say, apparently, they're going to rewrite their complaint. This is not a complete loss. They didn't win. Based on this motion, they're going to try and come at it. But you see, I point out early on, 230 has a bad faith provision. You can only get them if you can allege good faith. That they have a good faith provision that you have to allege the bad faith. And that's what they're going to have to adjust. And then it's not over. They got a big hill to climb relative to 230. They have to show a couple more things. I'm only going through all this. Some of you appreciate when I go through some of this more detailed discussion. I don't like to do it too much in a general listenership that I don't know who I'm speaking to. But as we move through these more difficult times and days, those of you that have a complaint, this is not just judicial. This will be how you set up an administrative complaint or when somebody comes against you that an authoritas or purportedly wants to claim to have some authority. You have to look at what their guidance is, and this is essentially the guide. You're being explained in this case the guide of what it would have taken. And it wasn't over, as I've said. You may make a mistake. In this case, the judge is going to extend the ability to amend. It's just an amendment. It's if the case continues on the amendment. It's not a new filing. You know, those of you that have done this, you've learned that if you don't put the amendment on there, they take it as a new filing and kill your case anyway. So just put it as an amendment of the original. And then you add the extra that you failed to show. This is why I'm always asking folks that when I help them, do we have our elements done right? And what are those, and where does it say, what's the standard for how you have to bring those forward? Do you have them in your complaint? So this is a critical observation, but these platforms are pretty protected in order to manipulate, use their algorithms, and you can't get at that. And so take a word to the wise, a word of warning to our little ones, too. Again, I'm prefacing all of this as how we know what we know, and who we communicate with, or whether we do and how we do. This is all being psychologically manipulated. So again, to me, the Bureau rat here is the real serious problem, because when we start talking about what they're talking to be misinformation, what the military would say is misinformation, what they decide is against national security, maybe you're very well, you're right to say, well, you're right to hear in error in order to see a better day in the future. And they don't have the right to decide that, and they're doing that prejudicially. So understand what's going on with that as I'm moving this through on how we're going to start to consider protecting ourselves, whatever the medium ends up being. But here we have go to the EU, a digital service that goes into effect today. Here's what that means, a paperwork from The Verge. I've done a link to let you know how this works. And it's interesting, if you watch the global nature of the Internet, how what they do in the EU affects the whole world is a very interesting problem in one regard, but also an advantage in another. And going through that balancing act for us is going to be an interesting condition. You're watching some pretty dynamic conditions relative to the platforms. For instance, Canada, C18, the platforms just aren't going to advance any news now because they'd have to pay for it. So screw it. We're not going to put anything out there and you suffer. And that's pretty interesting as well. The Digital Services Act forces companies to rethink their policies on advertising transparency and moderation. On the surface, this is a very interesting act. Because we don't have protections, I'm a bit agreeable to it. However, who is the one making the decision on this? And this becomes the real problem. It's like the military in a way, but it's even worse. It's a bureaucrat. It's somebody, just an agent. It's not a definitive discussion on what is determined by a court after evidence and due process. This is the main problem with the Services Act. The EU's best weapon against free speech isn't working. The European Union has just realized that it can't rule the Internet with an iron fist by throwing around the Kremlin propaganda label. Very interesting insight. The European Commission has concluded in a new report that despite making pinky promises to mitigate the reach and influence of Kremlin-sponsored disinformation, large social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook were unsuccessful in doing so. What a shocker that this research by oversight advocates has ended up advocating for more oversight. Russia just happened to be the most convenient scapegoat. Please accept that, because they just talked about Kremlin-sponsored disinformation. What if it was COVID misinformation? That's actually the law. Like if I would put something out in my Twitter, the military doesn't, because it's their DOD warp speed attack. They don't want my information out. They just determine it's misinformation without going through the courts to get a judicial determination after due process and evidence. The report goes on to say the platforms rarely reviewed and removed more than 50% of the clearly violative content we flagged in repeated tests. That is a serious statement. We flagged is that prejudicial determination without evidence and due process that an agency does to determine what you're saying and doing is wrong enough to censor you. And until we, the people everywhere, figure out how to stop that and demand, and I think the platform should be doing this, demand that they can only make these claims. It's the commission can only make the claims once it has a determination in a court of law that it was. Then you go to the platform. Until we get that settled, this is going to be worse. Well, it's a gulag. I was going to say the Wild West. Oh, this is going to be the gulag. Because these bureau rats have prejudicial determinative power. And this is the exact problem. Some bureau rat with their pennies in a wad determines what's acceptable, not the judiciary after trial. The bureau rat opinion prior to judicial review is what's known as prejudicial. There's no justice judicial review here. I'm not necessarily agreeing that the courts are there for it. What I'm saying is that there's no due process and evidence, not even in the court of public opinion. No, they decide that in the background by the algorithms. All the platforms, as I said, ought to object on the basis of this alone. All these platforms that the judicial warrant to censor speech should be in order, in place, and lawful, gone through the whole due process, appeals and everything, to determine. Boy, that would really cause a stick in the spokes, but isn't that what we would expect for justice and law to work hand in hand to verify that we're the criminal that they say? If we don't, we just live in this it's a policy system of a bureaucrat. So this is a very serious thing. This is an encroachment on everybody, and it just happens to be going through this digital social encountering system that is all, again, it's the EU, I can see where they're wanting to protect people against the profiteering of a click engagement happy platform. However, it goes beyond and it starts affecting what we say and what we do. And there's no problem. It's not against the law to not be against the law, but say something wrong. Again, you can learn a lot by watching, making your own error or watching someone else's error. And hopefully they come to the right answer after a while. And you get to see that too, or you get to interject and try to offer a better answer. That interaction is how we go through the world forward. It's how, if we can engage that way, we're not at war with each other. I guess the war is in words, not in bloodshed. But these bureaucrats want to have the seat of decision. They don't want to go through, they want to circumvent. This is a lot like reflexive law. There is no judiciary. It's already been decided based on some one's opinion what that outcome is going to be. That, when I talked to the judiciary, that doesn't, not a silver bullet either, as we find in lots of attorneys come out of Harvard as they do the Ivy League, as they do a lot of the university system. Harvard is named worst school for free speech, scoring 0 out of possible 100. This is the graduates of this university. This is not just this year, apparently. Harvard is just notorious for this problem. This is coming exuding. These are people, the ambassadors are coming out of these universities, in particular Harvard. They don't have a concept speech one. The free speech one is not in their vocabulary relative to what the institution is shoving down their students' throats. Harvard University is officially 2023's worst school for free speech. The Foundation of Individual Rights of Expression, FIRE, released its annual college speech free speech rankings on Wednesday, which dubbed the state of free speech at the Ivy League school abysmal. I'm not totally surprised that Sean Stevens, director of polling of analytics at FIRE, told the Post, we've done these rankings for years now, and Harvard is consistently near the bottom. And the hellists and all the politicians that come out and want to talk about free speech from Harvard, they don't understand what that is. And that's really the problem. We don't know who's coming through to make these decisions. We can just see them by, who knows them when we see them. That's the problem. That's the Libra code. There you go. We're living in a militarily occupied world, and the Bar Association, in this case, is supposed to be ruling on what free speech is, may not know the first thing about it. Now where do we go we go to sue, or we go to stop, or we try to protect ourselves to have our free speech, and we meet up with one of these folks? I have the link for the FIRE report. If you go through this, it's pretty interesting. Harvard's been ranked low all the time. Lots of colleges this way. Again, I've talked about the university system. It's designed now to go through and into the sustainable, abysmal, stinking abyss. It's how you pass through. It's what turns out to be the professions. It's still, to me, a little bit astonishing. There's still some separate thought out there, the way I've been looking at all this, having to deal with it. Again, remember, we have been fighting. The main problem is the attorneys in a lot of this. They'll tell you they know the law, and you go read the law, and they don't know the first thing about it. And I've told you, in dealing with people that are in counties and seats of decision, the elected official, what our objective, what our main task is to defeat what we know is going to be the wrong answer from an attorney, the county's counsel. That ends up being the job one. First you understand the subject matter, but then it's job one on anticipating what they're going to do to really mess it up. And the only way we found that it works is you find the objective black and white, and you go slow, and you show an official, in this case the representative of the county, to the official that's going to make the decision, that the representative of the state's council, the bar, is wrong by the words. that's why we've done it. So that's why I tell you, and it works. It's tedious, but that's the only thing I've seen that starts to turn the table. The problem here is we're getting the source, the foundation inside the people that make these decisions starts from the wrong place, the low level. Now, someone like a John Kerry promoting climate change, the ambassador for the United States, where it's an Ivy League school, I think he comes from. That's where it comes from. It's inside them. Now, there is an example, an interesting spot in the world, the most abysmal place to live during COVID swindle, Australia. Actually had a good answer here for what they're doing coming in through the internet, working through trying to verify you. And it's the answer that I think I've suggested. It came common sense to me. Why are you asking for 100% people's verification when you're only interested in protecting the children? Why don't you put that on their mothers and fathers to control? They have filters. Why do you create a big system unless your object is to create the big system? And Australia has backed off of engaging the whole system. I thought this was pretty neat. And this seems to be the right answer to me. And I think it's, again, bringing responsibility to those with little ones to protect their little ones. Australia will not force adult websites to bring in age verification due to privacy and security concerns. Now, just on the title, why isn't it that the United States is supposed to be free and free speech and just we do our thing until we find a crime and then it gets arrested and then we go through process and things? Why does the United States, the states of the United States, are requiring now IDs and age verification? When the answer comes in this little story here from Australia, of all places, the worst COVID swindle, most abysmal, stinking abyss to live in during COVID swindle. The e-safety commissioner is to work with industry on new code to educate parents on how to access filtering software and limit children's access. Now, I don't want to read more. That's the answer. Why isn't that in every state that professes the United States to be free speech and free dumb? Dumb. How great was that? Let the parents, so-called parents, the custodial agent of the ward of the state, the child, let alone all that. How about we put it on the local mother and father to teach their little one to block out, they use the technology, block out the access to the child instead of looking at the whole world, the rest of the world, and saying, you're the problem, you need to identify. If we can get this doesn't seem like a whole lot. You get this through, you don't need your ID anymore, do you? All of a sudden, now it's only on those, the responsibility on those that need to protect themselves. And what the government does, and you see it's very important here, I hope you appreciate this. The e-safety commissioner is to work with industry to help educate the parents. The government sits in a capacity to make it simple and also to oversight how the safety is going to come down and protect in a more unobtrusive way. And if you look at the code in the United States government, and I know, yeah, eyes will roll back, your bleeding eyeballs cracking, yeah, the desert, they just feel like grit and grime when you're finished reading these stuff. But you read the code of the United States, and you'll notice in the preambles, if I can say it that way, in the beginnings of these, they will show you that all the things there can do, and none of it is enforcement. It's all to monitor or give advice or offer data or do some kind of a thing. You see, the law's written for the government to be helpful. And there hasn't been a leash put on the government to be helpful, and so they become an attack dog. But here we had, I thought this was great, Australia will not force adult websites to bring age verification. This was not just about adult sites. This is about age verification and more information from each one of you that would use the internet. No, put it on those that have the obligation and responsibility to protect their little ones in this instance. That was a perfect answer. Why engage the world? And this is the thing about the sustainability crowd. One little thing happens over in a corner of the world and the rest of you have to pay for it. Has to stop. That's a good example right there of how to do it. The United States government agency invites organizations to help it accelerate adoption of digital ID. For those of you that think you're forced to do something, not even the government here. If you look closely, as I was saying, you look in the preamble of all these laws, there's nothing that says you have to. It says it recommends, it's going to help adopt, it's going to be monitoring, it's going to offer this, offer that. In this case, you see, an agency invites organizations to help accelerate. The problem is, these companies are profit-driven. And so what's going to happen? They're going to flood in, they're going to do what they've been asked to do in order to bring on the future that they want, these digital IDs. There appears to be a real sense of urgency among various governments and international organizations and groups, not only to implement, but to speed up as much as possible adoption of digital IDs. One of these entities is the U.S. government, with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, now inviting anyone with expertise and products to join the push for a speedy deployment of digital IDs on mobile systems. I suppose that means you could have said join to push at warp speed the deployment from this death cult on how we track this down. This is the interesting thing people are missing. There's no imposition by the government. They will invite you. It's like Dracula, you have to ask him in your front door. That's how it works. That's what they're doing right here. I thought this was important to see whether people appreciate that they're inviting companies to kill us, and they will accept that is a little different than the government coming in. We always think the government's coming in with its hammer. It doesn't work that way, actually. But it's on what? The future the government wants. Why? Because they want to track and trace. They want everybody to buy in. It's just buy in. Simply buy in. You're invited to make an offer to comply. And you do. You, my listener, maybe none of you may be listening that would do what they ask. The point is, they're going to get most people, but they're in the right same direction. You know, what are they doing in digital IDs and the verification loss? We get an answer out of Australia, you don't need to verify your age and other things. You don't have to do lots of other things. There's an answer away from that, but no, the direction is more, less anonymity, more information, more accounts to sign into. Disappointment to hear this one, although they still have an interesting little program. I haven't been able to be in a position to use it, but private Zoom alternative Jitsi Meet abandons anonymity promise. Real disappointed to hear this. I've read they're reading their user agree policies. They're very good. If you were to make a decision, a discussion with only one other party, I told you this before, Jitsi was honest enough to say that because it costs so much, they weren't going to continue to spread the data more than they needed to. They were going to make your communications private. This may be still sitting there to do, but what they're doing now with this is that they've abandoned the anonymity in that you need an account somewhere that they can connect you up through. And so you're known now. So there is a program, the Jitsi Meet, the server program that you can get involved with. You can do your own, and it is private. That's why I was appreciative of what Jitsi did here. But they've now, they as well, are removing the anonymity. Well-regarded encrypted video conferencing app Jitsi Meet has announced it will no longer promise anonymity to its users. Jitsi Meet, popular among journalists and those seeking enhanced privacy, has long been recognized as a secure alternative to mainstream platforms like Zoom, Microsoft Teams, or Skype, why Microsoft bought it. Its no-account-required service model has been a major draw for users, but that changed last month. This safe haven for privacy enthusiasts now requires Gmail, Facebook, and GitHub accounts to create a meeting room on its platform, a meeting room. I don't know if that's just a two or if that requires more than two. If you went to three, they did keep track. At any rate, a move that has ignited debates about its commitment to solid privacy and security norms. However, these identification requirements currently only apply to those creating meeting rooms, not the attendees. Doesn't matter here. They're moving from anonymity to making now you need to be tied in with these major platforms on top of it. Again, the click control, the consent, the engagement is being built into the system. Again, though, Jitsi Meet has a server a program you can load on your own computer, and you can, I think it's you can serve your own communications. I am not in a position to do that, but it's always interested me to be able to do so. But we would start doing that more ourselves to make that third, that other deep web, if you will, maybe Internet 4.0, where we serve our own stuff together and we move through the interwebs that way. Here we have, they want to know about you, but the government doesn't want you to find out about them. In this story, DHS agency used Slack and personal cell phones for meetings aimed at misinformation censorship. It has emerged that the Department of Homeland Security, DHS agency, again a bureaucrat, right, has been using unconventional and potentially insecure methods for hosting meetings and concerning misinformation, twisting the principles of transparency that democratic institutions are ostensibly built upon. These meetings were not conducted in government facilities or through official secure communications channels, but through a Slack channel and even personal cell phones, according to records. It's a jarring black mark against the Protecting Critical Infrastructure and Misinformation and Disinformation Subcommittee, part of CISA's Cyber Advisory Committee, whose primary obligation was to national security, which veered away from the standard protocol to be held critical talks about hot-button issues like misinformation censorship. Now, let's understand how high-level this so-called misinformation that a bureaucrat decides, and you'll maybe start to appreciate what I'm saying, how important it is what they're doing relative to labeling something misinformation, and it's a bureaucrat, not a judge, even from Harvard, looking over. I realize that the Democrat decided that other case, or assigned by Biden, I should say, made that other decision. So they can cross party if they're a good judge. Their party's not supposed to affect it. You would hope so. In that case, you can see that's in fact what she did, that one judge. But here, going on to this story, you see they don't want to be doing the kinds of the national security level of security for themselves. Again, this is all just a cover, it seems, for you to get you could considered more, again, the panopticon. Further complicating the issue, it has now also come to light that Twitter's head of legal, Vijaya Gadde, proffered to retire from an advisory subcommittee following a messy altercation with the Disinformation Governance Board. A report from Just the News shows it's a development that underscores the deep-rooted controversies surrounding the handling of so-called misinformation and how that continues to impact free speech. Interestingly, though, the agency director opposed the Twitter executive decision to quit the committee. Now let's get to the nuts and bolts about that. I'm just not talking about the news and the things we know. I'm trying to explain to you. You look inside this notice, and you're telling you certain things that are not clear, obvious on their face unless you have a clue about what's going on. They mentioned advisory committee. Let me point out and remind you, I've talked about these a lot for many times. It's what you have to deal with. It's part of that Hegelian dialectic as well. It's part of the collaboration. It's part of cooperation. It's part of how the government puts these things on and circumvents due process. If you're involved in one of these advisory committees, you are in a subservient authority to a lead agency, in this case, a very formidable one, the DHS agency. You're in a subordinate condition, and your contributions are accepted as long as the way it works, as long as it's in line with the agenda of the agency, the lead. And this is even a subcommittee. Why then, why would the official reject a Twitter departing? Answer? Because as long as Twitter is involved, it agrees to what that lead agency decides, and that lead agency can disregard all of Twitter's input. This goes for any organization such as a county collaborating through an advisory committee with the procedures of which are in federal law. So you're involved in a federal function as a local official and don't even know it. As a corporate head, you don't even know it. That's why this is very important stuff here. I don't know if you pick up on the subtlety, but that's why it was rejected. Now, that doesn't mean that the person was trapped as a prisoner. I suspect they could walk away. But this is on the front when you're smiling big teeth and shaking hands and try to keep friends in inclusivity. This is how you keep people in control. And whether or not this Twitter official understands why that rejection was going and what it means when Twitter continues, I don't know. What I'm telling you is this is notice to us of what's going on behind the scenes and how, even if we were to give some credit to a Twitter in protecting them, even their own profiteering, that they're in processes. They may not understand that condition, what they can do, and moves the government through and around actual due process. And so this is an interesting way that they've figured out, these attorneys, people from Harvard that don't want free speech, they figured out how to take your free speech from you while you're talking to you, while you're talking to them. You don't realize that when you're an advisory committee, you're in a second place position, that the one you're talking to, if it's the agency, is the lead. Now, we've had direct experience, and this is what caused some pretty interesting talk about some flames and wars, where the flame wars and fire in a county got involved with an advisory committee, found out that their information, what they wanted and needed to have done, was being disregarded. But because they were involved with that process, the agency decided around them, and they had no defense against it until they removed themselves. That caused the trouble. And that's when we got that county to start getting what it needed, because it started to work on its own, its organic power, not through a federal agency under the collusion of collaboration and cooperation. What's the other word? I've talked about all this. Coordination. That's when you coordinate head-to-head, power-to-power. And then there's a condition on the power, too. The Fed don't have the power over certain issues than the local county would. Anyway, I've talked about a lot of this. But this is a very, very powerful statement. It's not just about, Slack and personal cell phones being used on DHS misinformation. The fact that they're talking about misinformation is censoring you. We know the DHS is the military. Well, they don't seem to have the same standard for you, but now we see they're involving the corporations in a capacity the corporations have no actual power and input. That's a whole different dynamic. I hope you see some of that to appreciate. This is the model for how we get taken down as a people. This thing is everywhere. This advisory committee, you hear them all over the place. Task force, task groups, it's all the same authority, subverted. And we tend to think it's something good, and it's not. It's not where you have an authority. You don't want to hand your authority to someone that's in the lead. It's all written in the books, too. That's how I know about it. I started reading about it. Yeah, dry eyes. I rolled back in my head, tired, falling asleep. Keep reading. Read it again just to make sure you got it. And then start looking around. And you say, that they're doing that, and they're doing this, and those are the words they're using, and this is how they just did that. I don't know, those people that got screwed pretty bad. That was S-C-R-O-O-D for the sensitive hearing. Yeah, they got it all wired, and we don't understand it. They know us better than ourselves. And they think that we want to kumbaya and cooperate. Yeah, they're cooperating you right out of your rights. Anyway, interesting story right there. It's beyond that they got to use Slack. It's way beyond that. That notice is a big one. The wallet event. Here's the other side of the token citizenship issue that the digital ID is about. The wallet event. Crypto startup is bankrupt after losing password to 38.9 million physical crypto wallet. Wow. You have to now to exist in this digital ID world that we find out you don't need to verify. We already found out if you put the right responsibility in the right spot, then there's nothing has to do with it. The society can be going free from all this imposition. You put on the one who needs to be protected on those that have the obligation and then leave it. Losing passwords, authentication, and other form of access, whether directly or through third party, oopsie, is our problem walking into the brave new future. If the government government control weren't the biggest problem and the reason to avoid digital existence and ID, absolutely. We have this third-party problem that I've been talking about. Here's one wallet event. Crypto startup went bankrupt because they didn't remember what their password was. Could that be you? I suppose. A buzzy startup offering financial infrastructure to crypto companies has found itself bankrupt primarily because it can't gain access to a physical crypto wallet with $38.9 million in it. What if that happens to be your last $500 and you have to pay your rent? What if that wasn't you that did it, that it was this third-party processor like the X that lost your... Oopsie, we had a bad update. This is this future's technological, hardware-biased, prejudicial future we're walking smack into the wall in. The company also did not write down recovery phrases, locking itself out of the wallet forever in something that is called the wallet event to a bankruptcy judge. Now you get to talk to the system about it. Another judge from Harvard, apparently. Right? So here's the, you're just watching the failure of this digital future. The DHS, your military, how this place is now wired since 9/11, wants to track and trace you. They don't care about all these little problems that they invite a third party in to provide a service, that this is what happens. The company has not had a good few months. In June, the state of Nevada filed to seize control of the company because it was nearly near insolvency. It was then ordered to cease all operation by federal judge because it allegedly used customers' money to cover withdrawal requests from other companies. Now, insolvency, bankruptcy, is the United States government actually solvent as well, by the way? We're inviting all these third parties in to do what? Do this kind of stuff? Yeah, that's the world we're watching into, this digital ID that's being accelerated and promoted by the government, as we see the military behind the scenes of that ID that you're going to use and go everywhere is sitting there to manipulate what and how you learn and with whom you learn it and how you interact or not, or cause a fight or whatever, all digitally. It's fascinating, the control. But resistance isn't futile, the global rejection of CBDCs. Now, your IDs are going into the, you know, real ID. It's all, it's everything. Your biometrics, it's your life. It's your bank accounts. It's your driver's license. It's that permit you need to do whatever you need to do in your free society. That's your digital ID. It's going to be all of that. Part of that is how you pay for it. They're calling out the CBDCs right now, but resistance isn't futile. When we get out of Technocracy News, the insight in the article only misses the key point. The central banks are privately owned and not government institutions. And this is another key I want to interject, as I've been telling you. These are all third parties, not governments. And then you have this liability to what they claim their obligations are to what? The ESGs. There's only 214 central banks in the world, each serving only one client, and that is the host nation. The CBDC steamroller emanates from the central bank for central banks, the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. Everything I've told you right there is right here in this little summary by Technocracy News. Together, these central banks make up the giant vampire squid that is trying to take over the entire world and everything in it. They already have it. These are the sources of the WEF Great Reset, a.k.a. Technocracy, deeply in debt into their central bank nations, now take a marching orders from the central bank creditors, lest they be forced into bankruptcy and the seizure of their assets. Oopsie, password. Oh, we don't have it. Now you've lost because they were invited to give you the services through the government through a third party like this. This is like a fourth party, fifth party. This is the future being set up. And the CBDC is not actually what you're going to be talking to the to the central bank over. You're going to have your token citizenship different than this one at this point. Remember, they got Fed now working to do the wholesale exchanges right now. It's like the SWIFT, but for corporations. See, it's all the same as we talk about this. But rejection of this system is not futile. It's what I've been talking about. It's what I think everyone has to do. Just say no, and then tell them why. Tell them you have different rights. Tell them you have the right. Again, if you do, don't give me tokens. I'm not going to be a token citizen. I want specie. I want money. I want gold and silver. Make that good again. Make that great again. Money is great again. Put that into gold coins. Start insisting on it. If you got to backtrack to cash in the interim, then do it, because it's going to be better than this token citizenship that's ruled by third and fourth and fifth parties. Remember, Elon Musk's X is going to be this everything app that is the intermediary. It's going to be one of these folks, these companies invited by the DHS to do the monetary exchanges for you and everything else that Elon Musk is telling you he wants to do. been adjusting this thing over time. But the global rejection of CBDCs is a story that was gotten by Technocracy News. It starts out here. The Biden administration and the Federal Reserve are taking steps to potentially roll out the central bank digital currency. It's attempting to do so. They are ignoring serious, in attempting to do so, they're ignoring serious concerns about consumer privacy and heavy-handed government control in the U.S. and abroad. Well, think about that one. The U.S. CBDC has the power to affect everything abroad. Now you're looking at the dollar hegemony that's not going to really go away. Remember, it's a global system. It's already there. And this BRICS thing is adjusting the parity to those that are up-and-comers that can't, actually. Everywhere around the world, powerful heads of central banks and politicians, the bureaucrats here too, are pushing central bank digital currency. And they have to have that digital ID that the corporations are being asked to push as well. And the military is saying, yeah, it will invite you to do so. Yet also around the globe, from the United States to Europe to Africa, more and more of the general populace are rejecting CBDCs as they learn what they would entail and experience them in practice. How important, then, is that we have unadulterated, untouched by military algorithms, our information to see this through? We're getting to see it right now. Think about the future when the military sees a trend moving along, a denunciation of some digital thing that they need to have done, and now pretty soon it just disappears, and they put psychology out there and people start picking up to do the bidding of the government to promote it. So simple how they can do this. A CBDC is a digital form of national currency issued or coordinated by a nation's central bank. Unlike paper or private decentralized digital currency, a CBDC leaves an electronic trail for purchases and sales within a government digital ledger. The ledgers of such information are in the hands of the government or the third party or the bureaucrat that in many cases have a dark history of abuses of civil liberties. Yeah, it's going to be the civil society they impose upon you. But its incentives here, you read farther down in this article, just like the digital DHS digital ID incentives, Nigerians were less than thrilled as a mass protest, boycotts, and utter rejection of a CBDC have ensued. So it's resistance not futile. We see the evidence. Even though the Nigerian Central Bank released huge incentives for citizens to adopt Naira, according to Nicholas Anthony from the Cato Institute, the Nigerian government removed access restrictions so the bank accounts were no longer required to use the CBDC, then offered discounts if people used the CBDC to pay for taxi cabs. No offer has swayed the population to this day. They do not force a thing on anybody. They offer it, invite you to accept, and it's allowed, and it's up for your consent or rejection. It's that simple. This is what this is all about. This is how stupid this whole thing ends up being when you see lots of people just going ahead and saying, I'm okay with it. It's like the blue checks on Twitter. They psychologized everybody into promoting the power of free speech, and it's not anything about that. It's about engagement. That's it. Click engagement. It's about money. It's about profit. It's about control eventually. They enticed you to buy in. You did, and it's noted. The verification blue check mark to me is no different than these CBDCs. Same thing. Same identical thing. And they're done the same way. Nobody's forced. They offer it to you, and then the government, when you accept, doesn't have to worry about consent. They don't have to worry about due process. They don't have to worry about anything. And they, plus, psychologically, they have you anyway. And that's the other thing, when you've accepted. Now you got the psychology working against you. Now you got this mistake you made, and when you find out in the future it was a mistake, look at the egg on your face, and boy, what do? I promote the problem I created for myself and say that was okay? Or do I really have to pull up my big boy pants and do something that is a lot more work, a lot more embarrassment, may fix the problem, but then again, I'm out of that system, aren't I? That's a different issue. That's a whole different thing as well. And inside this system, you got the system that's supposed to be inviting you in, the government. Its agents are all around. Police arrested over suspected $270,000 Bitcoin theft. A pair of Moscow police officers have been charged with large-scale fraud and could face up to 10 years in prison. The two officers in the Moscow police force have been detained on suspicion of swindling $265,000 of Bitcoin from a businessman, the law enforcement sources have told the local media. What they did is they just strong-armed him and said they found out he was a Bitcoin investor, and they said, if you don't give us some of this Bitcoin, we're going to go ahead and press charges. And so he gave him the Bitcoin. Well, it got found out. The Moscow police press service confirmed the TASS news agency that the suspects misled a citizen about his alleged involvement in unlawful activities and received money from him for avoiding liability. If you listen to that real carefully, doesn't that sound like the government generally everywhere? Doesn't it? How that works? Misled a citizen into his alleged involvement in unlawful activity. Everything you do can be alleged as unlawful, especially when it goes through a bureaucrat without judicial oversight. And even so, even then it can get passed through. And so, to me, that last story was pretty, maybe focused on Moscow, but I think every government in the world does that little trick. Social credit light, unraveling Australia's Orwellian crackdown on bank clients. So where we have Australia making a very nice decision to let the mothers and fathers understand how to do the software to protect their little ones from information they don't want the little ones to have. No, Australia is still going to go ahead and do the future they want and crack down on their Orwellian crackdown on bank clients. Read the here, if you go through the phenomenon of debanking, the freeze of or closure of personal or business accounts based on reputational risks, including the views of that may conflict with those of the government, has been gaining steam in many Western countries, once touted as a bastion of free speech and liberal democracy. Now the land down under seems to be the latest victim. Banking restrictions are the latest and perhaps most insidious form of cracking down on the free speech rights of those outside of the political mainstream, since they are designed not only to deplatform but to literally strip offenders, in quotes here, the bureaucrat statement, your own offender, misinformation, Mr. Information here too, offenders of access to money. The resource people need to feed, house, and clothe themselves. This is what happens in this digital world that I've been discussing. And these offenders are not as obvious as people who may be committing a crime, or at least plausibly or probable cause-based so. This is anybody who violates the ESGs, some sensibility made by some bureaucrat based on no science whatsoever. They claim it's science based on no judicial hearing, based on no due process, made no evidence whatsoever. And they take your life. They deplatform your life right off just by a click of a button. Now, you want to talk about click engagement? Yeah, you're going to see how fast people are behaving correctly real soon on this. But the phenomenon of debanking, the freeze of closures of personal and business accounts based on reputational risk, including views that may conflict with those of the government, is what we're talking about when you hear about the DHS talking about working algorithms to anticipate a future, a gathering narrative to head it off at the pass, so to say. Yeah? You see how this works? So controllable. Easy. They figured it out. And this a disappointing statement here from the UK column. UK column's kind of an interesting website. For those of us that would be contrarians on all the stuff that we see this nonsense, these big people speak in that sense. And they're from UK, and they speak about things in that area pretty nice, pretty well, pretty articulate as well. I think this might be the site where I understood better what I kept telling you was the being liable to the obligation of a third party that was determined that you were acting outside of, that they could cut you off. This is one of the websites that was someone who wrote about those things as well. But this article was troubling a bit, but I want to point it out. And I want to point it out because I think it's naive, at least maybe naive, why we won't have digital slavery. Now, I think we're in a digital slavery already, but not neither here nor there relative to what's coming in this digital world. And yes, resistance is not futile, but you watched as in COVID swindle as 70% or so of the population just gave over to it. And so this is the dynamic that goes on. But in this article, you can read through it, pretty long article, goes through a lot of things. It has a certain view that they have. I don't want to dismiss that part. Let them say what they have to say. They sound very clear, talk about a pseudo-pandemic and this kind of thing in here. But I want to caution us how to present it, but I want to say, I think the matter that they're talking to is framed incorrectly, such as characterizing the condition as one of those wielding power, the system wielding power. That's just what I was just telling you they're not doing. In the invitation, I point out, they invite, they analyze, they offer, they give, they do this, they do that, they get you to buy in. But there's not a wielding of power, and I think this is the framing that's incorrect that lets this author come to the point that we won't be into a digital slavery. According to dissidents such as Lane Davis and Simon Elmer, we are about to become digital slaves. The slavery will be introduced and operated by the oligarch rulers of our society in order to gain total power. Well, there's going to be these oligarch rulers, and they're going to be these bankers, these banking things. But understand, to order to gain total power means, in this statement, the people that the author is discussing against, they don't agree that they have the power, which is the important point here. You're going to give it to them. They're going to give the similitude of that power in your compliance, in your agreement, in your use, in your consideration of the convenience. I'm moving here that I wanted to add, the slavery will be introduced and operated by the oligarch rulers of our society in order to gain total power. But understand, the technocrat protagonists are not wielding the power. They expect that you will give your power up by buying into their deceptive seductions with your consent, even by inaction. For those of you that think you can get away from this by not doing anything, no, that the inaction allows that. Allows the crime, essentially. The philosopher here that talks about this can then improperly dissect and dismiss the problem under a cloak of impossibility. You'll see that in this article. He sets up that there would be this power they have. In fact, it's just going to be you giving it. Since he makes it a power grab, the power that they have, they're wielding, I think this is an impossible. This is a problem. He's not the philosopher writing here. I don't think appreciates the human spirit to agree, to get along, and to go along, and all these kinds of things. The improper dissection diminishes this problem under the cloak of impossibility. Gaining control is not that complicated in all this. If you notice, as I was saying, I've been using over and over again because it's so prevalent to see it, so obvious. Kobe Swindle proved all that. To get control over you, any one of you, my listener, all anyone has to do is to get you to accept their offer, as any drug addict knows, to be given. This has to do with how you pay for things you need in your life. You will be, do about anything to keep your ability to live when there's no other option, because you chose that convenient limitation. You've said, give me the drug, give me the thing I need. I want to have some more now that I've tried it. But now I need to do it, so I've got to keep coming back to you. Now you're that slave. It's pretty much that simple. We become addicts in lots of ways. There's books that talk about don't indulge yourself that way, and there's reasons why you don't indulge, because they can be exploited. Well, this is the digital slavery, as I've termed it here many broadcasts now, token citizenship. It doesn't require mass acceptance, just your acceptance. And I hope you appreciate how simple that is. Now, it's cool to hear, I won't comply. But they've got so many angles, I don't know that people understand what they're not going to be complying to, but they'll be accepting just a little bit, just a little hesitation on just going ahead and accepting a convenience. And it's difficult. I'm already seeing there's just no way to move around anymore without having to give a little bit. And that little bit gets bigger and bigger until they consume you. You gave over them. You gave them your power. And you didn't say no. You didn't say no with a reason. If you go up any official, you have to have a reason, because they have the police power to force you. But if you look closely, that's not even a forcing, if you will. There's a bit of a deception going on, it seems, in that last article, which I would have, the website, normally I appreciate their information, I think it's misframed. And then this other philosopher is in the news same time, which is fascinating to me in one regard. Alexander Dugin, and sorry to hear that his daughter got blown up by the Ukrainian military or secret services. Sad condition there, but again, moving beyond that into what he's now talking. Alexander Dugin is a renowned philosopher in Russia. His comment here is global liberalism in crisis. Now, I don't get too much behind all these terms because they just seem to have changed over time. Whatever liberalism is seemingly different now, but that's a little harder to keep track of relative to this. But my view on this story, and it was surprising that I saw him speaking in this. You know, he's supportive of what Russia's doing, and I think he's again framed this story wrong. And I think these philosophers, maybe they aren't quite as philosophical as they've been looking. They don't understand the mechanics of some of this. I'm seeing this a lot different than what they're allowing to discuss and allow, let's say, Alexander Dugin promoting what Russia is doing. I don't think he understands this underlying condition. Liberalism is headed to a catastrophe following decades of global ideological hegemony, political philosopher Alexander Dugin told Sputnik News Rules podcast. Over the past several years, however, the ideological future has come increasingly under question. Populist upheavals in the United States and Europe expose growing discontent in the ability of liberal institutions to cope with foreign policy and economic failures. At the same time, new emerging powers such as Russia, China, and India, among others, have begun to put forth their own ideological alternatives. Now, that statement is a setup for a takedown, in my view. And this is what Alexander Dugin speaks to, as if Russia is doing... Okay, so you're talking Russia, China, India. That's BRICS. And this, their own ideological alternative, I've explained and shown in links to go show, to read. If you're going to the broadcast, you see it. There's nothing that's their own, nor is it ideological alternative. It's not ideological or alternative that hasn't already been set up for them. And this philosopher, renowned philosopher, my eyes are kind of wide here. I think he's missing it on this thing, just like the other guy misses it. You misframe this thing. You don't understand what the trick is underneath it, and it's easy to get complacent about what your thoughts are about it. The collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991 allowed liberalism to emerge as an undisputed dominant global ideology. Over the past several years, however, the ideology's future has come increasingly under question. Populist upheavals in the United States and Europe expose discontent and inability of the liberal institutions to cope with foreign policy and economic failures. At the same time, the new emerging powers such as Russia, China, and India, among others, have become put forth their own ideological alternatives. This has to do with the BRICS, as I've just said. The nations actually begun to put forth their own ideological alternatives can't happen in that BRIC system. The problem with the terms, even with the most notable philosopher here, appears to have been have it wrong. Global liberalism, i.e. cancel culture, i.e. transformational transhumanism, direct democracy, a.k.a. sustainability, is what Russia is helping to install. Well, Dugin, I read on, contended to liberalism. Understand, this is Dugin in Russia is orthodox. What we would think of the most basic orthodox American pie and things like that, the most basic, wholesome aspects that America, we thought, was, is being tried to be put in through the orthodoxy of Russia. They're trying to bring back some basis of moral capacity in their society. He's talking that the West is liberalism, that they're putting this in. What he doesn't understand is Russia's putting in that liberal system by adopting it through BRICS. Dugin contended liberalism is gradually losing its global ideological dominance, and Russia is helping to spearhead the process. I've explained broadcast after broadcast how that is not happening. I've definitively shown with the succinct summary of the prior report that they have not, will not, and cannot be separate from the global financial system. There's a definition for it. Go look at it. It's in one of the broadcaster links. I remind you, global means you, my listener. If remaining a cricket or otherwise doing nothing to distance yourself from being marked by the global system beast. Alexander Dugin, really, I'm surprised at your non-liberal systemic sustainable blindness. Mr. Dugin, seriously, Russia is putting the system in. It's no different than the rest of the West, ultimately, and it's a financial destruction of financial slavery implemented by digital means. Going on and reading this article here, precisely because it is in the last form of collective identity, he said, as evidence of the liberals' increasing anti-human worldview. Dugin pointed to the growing popularity of transhumanism and movement, a movement that advocates the use of emerging technologies to remake human beings, and radical environmentalism among Western elites is not obviated by bringing on all the technocratic technology to break everybody in Russia, irrespective of the human being radical environmentalism, to the same place. And understand the human being, that's a word that's been made up since, what, about the 1400s? I think it came through the Catholic Church, not Orthodoxy. The word is man we should be using. It's a humanism. But he talks about may remake human beings and radical environmentalism among Western elites, not just the Western elites. A goal of transhumanism, the technocrat intends to create token citizens, digital token citizens, your DHS-driven invited ID system. This is the process that Russia is on the leading edge of at this point. Again, Alexander Dugin, what are you thinking? Is this the Russian Greta? Really? And I'd ask Mr. Dugin, lots of points he makes a lot of good sense, but this one I think he's missing it. Mr. Dugin, please look deeper. Have the philosopher look a lot deeper, and maybe the game of chess might help to peer into the future moves and their meaning relative to what's going on with this world system. Whereas, we'll go back a little bit to the BRICS and where the bank located was a story, but there's interesting information inside it. Since the inception of the Bretton Woods system, developed countries' disproportionate influence has bludgeoned developing nations' collective plight into submitting to Western bidding. This situation has yielded to an equitable financial institution, the BRICS Bank. So right here in this story is counter to what Alexander Dugin is saying, with Russia being involved, as looking at it as a developing nation that needs this parity concern, particular for Russia that's tainted because of their sanctions. They've been put into a disparate place anyway with the sanctions. That gave them the impetus to go ahead and move this forward, which is interesting. But this is a Bretton Woods system, and I've talked to you and said that there was a bigger financial system created around this that no one escapes from. None are left behind. At its core objective here is to assist member countries and other emerging economies in sustainable development and infrastructure projects. The NDB seeks to fill funding gaps for infrastructure and development, spur economic growth, and boost cooperation among BRICS members, aiming for a more balanced global financial system. So here it is. Alexander Dugin misses this whole liberal attachment to this whole system. This is why I dislike these words that we use, the isms. I mean, it's just not functional in a way anymore. Reading on the quote here, the statement here, the global economic influence in this is establishing the NDB has enhanced the global economic influence of the BRICS countries. It signifies their collective commitment to reshaping the international financial landscape and challenging the dominance of the Western institutions. The drive for domestic currency financing primarily seeks to diminish reliance on the U.S. dollar and other international settlement currencies. The collaborative, when I say collaboration and cooperation and the administrative lead and all this advisory council and committees right here, the system of how they subvert, how sustainability subverts people, the collaborative actions in this arena will add to the elevation of the global significance of the national currencies of NDB members, bring them into parity to the existing global system. They're not different. They're not ideological alternatives, and they're not their own, as Alexander Dugin, the renowned philosopher, believes. The New Development Bank, the NDB, headquarters building, to answer the question of the article, is in Shanghai, China. And it took the ceremony of getting its completion was December 17th, 2020, situated within the Shanghai Expo Park. This building has now become an iconic structure along the Huanghu River. So Alexander Dugin, and why the author, apologize not getting your name, about not become digital slaves. This is the future that's set up on whether you call yourself liberal or don't call yourself or don't even talk about what you are and you think that you're different. That's a pretty interesting mind warp, if you ask me, denying what you are or moving to because you can't see it. Interesting blindness here. Again, the sustainable blindness is Alexander Dugin is surprising to me. Unless I've read that article wrong, he's missing a big deal. And that's the problem here for that is because he's missing the article and promotes what Russia is doing, he's promoting the advent of this future system. And understand, you know, again, the digital ruble, the digital system, their whole financial system went to getting IDs. They weren't different than the COVID swindle. They had their own, the Sputnik 5 vaccine. But what all this thing goes through, most people seem to be acquiring. Again, you're invited to accept it. They're handy. They're convenient. Your smartphone and what it is, it can be used to stalk and control domestic abuse victims. And it can be used as a weapon against you if you're a victim. And I just don't see the difference between you having this against a spouse or whomever is stalking you in the government. This article says that we've looked at a lot of privacy from the Big Brother standpoint, how the National Security Agency or corporate giants like Google track us online, say for political reasons or to make money from ads. But there's another kind of privacy concern that is a lot more intimate. If you could call it Little Brother, though it's really more like husband and wives, lovers and exes, who secretly watch their partners from a distance. They are cyber stalking. Using digital tools, they are a lot cheaper than hiring a private detective. And don't forget, this whole system requires that you have these phones. You have to have and you pay for it. You pay for all this stuff. You pay for the phone. You pay for the service. You pay for hookup. You're going to pay your fees. Do you think that the government can use the same tools to stalk every one of my listener? I think this is a story not about domestic abuse victims. This is about domestic abuse, and I'm talking about the national domestic abuse. Foreign and domestic? They call you a domestic terrorist? Yeah, I think we're giving a little bit, we're saying, been told and reminded that smartphones, with what we've heard today in this broadcast, smartphones are the stalking device. I've told you this over and over. It's just again, right here to more people seeing it, more confirmation of what I've been saying, showing us the lack of consistency with which the government functions relative to what they demand upon us. And it's adjusting, and it's the thumb screws are getting tighter and tighter. So let's look at what the government's changing now. For some of us, we don't travel through the airline, so we don't care, but a lot of people do, millions and millions. And so if the government will do this, leaked email CBP tells airport its new facial recognition target is 75% of passengers leaving the U.S. This report and story is about it increasing how it's doing surveillance on most everybody. In fact, the email identifies how much they want to increase it, and it says this is a national, not a peer airport goal and applies to flights departing the U.S. Note sent to airline companies. The spokesperson added that CPB's ultimate congressional mandate goal, so now your representatives you voted for did this, goal is 97% or greater biometric exit compliance. All right, and this speaks to what they say here, the traveler processing rates, a more accurate depiction of progress on implementing biometric exit and offers a more complete picture on how robust biometric exit processing is on a national level. The CBP has been messaging the change to goals to stakeholders. Now, those stakeholders are, again, within the context of the stakeholders like Genghis Khan that will raid you and get what they want. And you will be pressured in order to make it more convenient and or even get what you need, which is travel. We were talking about this a decade ago. They were going to increase it. Now we have communications, apparently. Their goal is 97% of you. My question is, what is the external viewing CPB doing, looking at all of its American citizens? Is our problem. It's where the system broke. It's what happened in 9/11. So understand this. We're not stopping that as a people either. So if the government will do that, put you all under surveillance, track and trace you, they're getting more and they're getting third parties to help. They're telling the airlines, this is what we need. You will do it. And they will do it. Now we hear this terrible little story, but if the government does that and we understand governments kill things, kill other people, it'll do this. Saudi man receives death penalty for posts online. Latest case in wide-ranging crackdown and dissent there. So posting something online was enough to get a Saudi court to sentence a man to death over his posts on X, formerly known as Twitter, and his activity on YouTube, the latest in a widening crackdown of dissent in the kingdom that was drawn international criticism. Remind you about DHS wanting to make AI that anticipates trends and anticipates national security threats. It is no different to me. Maybe you're going to be treated just a little different. Maybe they won't swat you to death. I don't know what the outcome is. But I don't see much difference in this story using the judiciary to kill somebody for posting something online that some bureaucrat decided, in this case the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, has a wider effort to stamp out defiance of his kingdom. Now, bureaucrat defines their feudal system as whatever their agency's over. That's their kingdom. The DHS has a much larger one. It's the whole nation. You notice that what I talked about earlier, national security was the very first thing they went to. Yeah, that's where it goes. And so, we think we are just putting something out on X and nothing else is going on. No, well, you get certain spots and certain times, you could be this guy. Another way to crack down on dissent, as we've been going on and moving through, as we watched it in the communicable disease field, surging cases of flesh-eating bacteria spook U.S. Now, U.S. must just be the government. They get spooked about everything, right? They're just terrified. The government's just a terrified entity, isn't it? But another way to crack down on dissent is to spook everyone. Fear. And that last story is pretty fearful, fearing. You put something on X and you live in you get anywhere near the Bin Salman can get a hold of you, you might be put to death because he don't like it. Several fatal cases of the disease caused either contaminated seafood, caused by contaminated seafood or open wounds, exposure to Vibrio vulnificus bacteria, predominantly found in warm seawater, have been registered in Florida, U.S. this year. I was reporting on this a little bit ago. Now it's making the news to spook us, all at the same time as some other things are starting to scare us and fear us and surging. The flesh-eating bacteria typically multiplies faster during hot weather, and the infection surging after hurricanes. Be afraid, folks. This is serious. I wouldn't want to get this, but the point is that all coming together, right? they're spooked. The United States is spooked. How the whole United States spooked is very interesting. A spike in cases of people suffering from infections triggered by the flesh-eating bacteria has sparked a national health alert in the United States. Not an outbreak and not an epidemic. This is an alert. See, this is what the government actually does. It gives alerts. It tells people, gives them a heads up so they can decide what they want to do. Not enforce them what to do. They give them a heads up so they can decide on their own. This is a health alert given. And how does it get around the United States? Well, apparently it's in the food. Connecticut has a problem. You got to be careful there. And so those of you eating the food, you might have something somewhere else, eating it raw. Well, you're supposed to, I guess, cook your food. At any rate, research shows the disease resulting from the bacteria infection is fatal in 1 in 5 people who fall victim to it. The flesh-eating bacteria caused 5 deaths in the Bay Area of Florida since the start of the year, according to official figures. Eating raw shellfish containing the bug has been linked to 2 deaths in Connecticut. And as the United States heat waves in July and August, North Carolina and New York similarly reported more fatal V. vulnificus infections. Be safe out there, folks. Maybe cook your shellfish. But, okay, be spooked as well is the thing here. Now, they talk about this little organism, but then we see this story, and I think this is truly more spooky to think about. Genetically modified soil microbes may have irreversible consequences. A plan by major agro companies to develop genetically engineered soil microbes, including bacteria and fungi, the fungi here, we're having fungi, a lot of fun, to act as a pesticides and fertilizers in raising concerns about the unknown and potential disastrous risks associated with the new organisms, according to a report published Tuesday by Friends of the Earth. So you don't have to worry about those being spooked about the natural ones. No, let's look at this. This is one of the reports, the types of reports I've been doing for a long time, genetically modified anything, unintended consequences about this. This is not a good thing. Bayer, Monsanto, Syngenta, and BASF are among the chemical giants known to be developing the microbes, which according to the report are fundamentally different from the alleged already controversial genetically modified organisms that have existed for decades. What are we doing? Talk about needing to have some protection. These organisms have been existing for a long time. And then we read this, Putin, issues warning on genetics technology. Leading researchers will produce a terrible weapon, the Russian president warns. Russia understands the importance and dangers of genetic technology and seeks to maintain an ethical approach to this field of research as it may ultimately yield a weapon of terrible destruction and power. I'll just tie that to the first part, the genetic condition. It seems that all these major companies, agrochemical companies, have these microbes. They want to do it for what? They want to do it for fertilizer, and they want to do it to combat fungus and other organisms. They want to make us believe that they're better. We haven't seen any of that. But I wanted to bring this up with Putin saying it. No, these genetic technologies, there's a problem with them. They can be a weapon. We're not being tested for the weapon. The COVID swivel didn't test that for a weapon, even though, as a matter of communicable disease law, the jab was not a vaccine as a matter of law. Well, nobody stopped that either. I want to remind us that Russia was already also there talking about this potential for weaponizing these organisms. The U.S. seeks to establish global biological control. It was written by the Defense Ministry. The United States is looking to establish worldwide dominance over biological situations and is making administrative, financial, and diplomatic efforts to achieve this goal. Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, a head of Russia's Radiation, Chemical, and Biological Defense Forces, stated, I've already read this article before. I wanted to bring it back. They're highlighting that the United States government, and because it must promote business, that's what it's all about, and these corporations are on tap to promote what we think we need to enhance, let's say fertilizer in this case, through genetically modified organisms, is not necessarily a good thing. I have to agree. I think most of us, the listener behind the woodshed here, must agree too. They're not necessarily, the unintended consequences cannot be known, and they don't test for them. Because if they found them out, they couldn't make the profit on the investment they put in it, right? So it's a backward situation. West received Russia on grain deal. We would think this is a little bit offhanded here to be talking about it. West deceived Russia on grain deal. The majority of shipments on the Ukraine under the Black Sea Initiative did not go to poor countries. But what was inside this story was a little bit interesting to me. a quick little statement. West lied to the Russia when it stated that the humanitarian goal of the Black Sea Initiative was to deliver Ukrainian grain to the poorest countries in the world, President Vladimir Putin claimed on Monday. The West lied, and so we see that continuing. Russia will, we get near the bottom of this, Russia will meanwhile continue to export food and fertilizer products to improve the situation with the global agricultural industry, meaning the European prohibition of fertilizer will destroy its agriculture as planned. So in these little notices, we see little truths where the chemical corporate agro is moving into genetically modified organisms to create fertilizer. Why? When the EU's cutting it out. This is all profit-driven. This is all setting up things to, in order to move the profit centers around the world. It has nothing to do with helping you. They don't care about you. They care about the profit. The United States is designed for that. Go look in the original documents. You'll start to see the commercial nexus. The U.S. betrays its own principles to preserve chaos in Syria, moving on into this chaos that the United States creates everywhere, and someone profits from it. They don't. Again, you are irrelevant here. Washington has sanctioned two opposition groups for human rights abuses, and Republican lawmakers have paid U.S. proxies a visit. But the problem here is the U.S. has become unprincipled completely, it seems, and not unlike what I'm contending with here in my current situation. There's no principle behind what's going on. They just move on this sense of what they think they need. No future thought. Not like Putin saying, listen, these modifications to these organisms are not necessarily very good, and we're watching as they're designed by the United States to be weaponized. On August 17th, the United States Treasury Department concerned trolled Damascus in the sanctions announcement, citing that the need to protect peace, security, stability, and territorial integrity of Syria, or at least the part where the oil is and all over which the actual president of Syria has so little control that the government has repeatedly accused Washington of stealing the oil by hauling it across the border to Iraq, with the protection of the United States military. Now, remember, I've talked a little about this as well. Again, the United States is just a beast. It's not merely stealing, it's taking natural resources from a country. That's a war crime. Just a few days after the United States sanctions were imposed on a group of Republican congressmen arrived in Syria, given Washington's respect for its national sovereignty, surely they had permission from the Syrian government to enter, which must be why they came in through the back door from Syria and the U.S. and the rebel-controlled side of the country and only reportedly stayed for 30 minutes. In the quote here, what I believe Syria needs, and the same thing the U.S. needs, is America's leadership. French Hill, Republican AR. If you think these Democrats and Republicans are different. What I believe Syria needs, and the same thing the U.S. needs. As a representative of the Unit Party, what's his title to Syria to have an opinion, let alone the contrary to what the people that live there want to say? There's no principles in these rabid Congress critters, none. And this is our main problem. And we, the people, are then imputed with that lack of principle in the world. We're going to have to come to terms. That's us. That's how we deal with it or don't deal with it. And it goes on. This unprincipled nature is out in the world. It looks something that people are running from. Interestingly, though, that's a tool to get them to run into another trap that's already been set up for them. Like it would be you at home, my listener. Hope something I said today will help you understand what's going on, how to put some of the things in the world together, bring it home. You see it's happening here, same stuff that happens out there. It's universal, this deceit, deception is evil. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Wave.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.